The dates of this week are forever seared into the memories of people in the Reading area. It was this week last year that a wheel rim scraping on pavement sparked the car fire, which burned into and through Reading. Eight people died and more than 1,000 homes were destroyed. And our first guest today remembers the time well. Valerie Ng is JPR's Northern California coordinator and a host. So she hosts a classical music program, sells underwriting, keeps an eye on the news, and generally represents JPR in the greater Reading area where she lives and works. And she joins us on the mic from the Reading studio. Val, good to have you here.
Good morning.
So your work was basically unaffected. Your home was untouched, but it's just off the top, does Reading feel quote unquote normal again a year later?
No, it doesn't. I mean, you know, there's so much going on and yet it looks like nothing's going on here, mm-hmm. right? Because so many people's lives were turned upside down and I mean, I have so many friends, even though I wasn't impacted as far as losing any of my belongings or my employment, so many people that I know did, that every day you come into contact with people and hear stories that are evolving every day.
What do you remember most about the night the fire came into town, Val?
Well, it started the night before. I mean, of course, the fire started on Monday, and then it rolled into town and burned 1,300 homes on Thursday. But for me and the rest of the community, really, it started on Wednesday night when I was coming home from book club, and I looked out to the north and west, and I could see flames. The glow of flames coming over the mountains. And I thought that was really odd because the fire was supposed to be much further away from that. You know, everybody knew about the fire that had started out at Whiskeytown Lake and that it had burned towards the community of French Gulch, which is further north and west away from Reading, you know, about 18 miles away. Maybe not quite that far, but seeing those flames over the mountain, I thought, that's not right. And I turned to my friend that I was taking home and I said, you know, you should probably get all your important stuff and pack it in your car just in case. Pack a bag just in case.
Did she live in a part of town that you figured might get hit?
She lives about 6 blocks away from me. Mm-hmm. And I just thought it would be better to be safe than sorry. Better to be as prepared as possible. And so I went home and I did the same thing. And then I couldn't sleep. I just kept thinking about it. And I got on Facebook and I saw that a couple of friends of mine were out at Whiskeytown Lake live streaming, which is something they've never done in their lives before. And I thought, okay, I have to watch this.
Right.
So I got on and they were across the lake filming Oak Bottom Marina, the docks and all the boats burning.
I remember the pictures of that, where the firefighters actually released the boats in the hope that they could save some of them, but they all seemed to catch on fire anyway.
Right. One of my friends was out on the lake in his boat filming other boats burning, and then in the course of that night, his boat burned as well. So it was... So I went to bed with that knowledge that the fire had come all the way back to Whiskeytown Lake, and I thought that's horrible. But I really did think it was far enough away that I wouldn't wake. I didn't think I was going to wake up the next morning and find out that the fire was licking at the city limits of Reading, but that's where it was. And so when I woke up the next morning and saw that Old Shasta, which was about 3 or 4 miles closer to Reading. 7 miles maybe closer away from Oak Bottom Marina, that Old Shasta was burning and all these homes of people I knew had burned, I did the math and realized that if it went that much further in that amount of time on Thursday, that was all the way to the Sundial Bridge. And that would mean that the entire western half of the city could be on fire. And so that's when I really got serious. I woke the kids up. I said, everybody pack everything that cannot be replaced by insurance money and put it in your car. And then go to work like normal. But you will know that you have done everything you can to protect the things that are important to you. So all the P's, pets, prescriptions, photographs, passport, all that stuff, artwork, all my genealogy work that I've been doing for about 20 years. put it all in my car and went to work and started reporting news.
Valerie Ng is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, but she also works at JPR. She's JPR's Northern California coordinator and a host on our classical music service. We're talking about her experiences in Redding last year as we look back a year later at the car fire. Got questions, comments, stories of your own to share? Join us on the Exchange, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Where did you learn this stuff about all the P's, packing the prescriptions and the photos and all that stuff?
It was later, I guess, as I was, you know, starting to tell my story to people, you know, my experience, and I realized that everything that was really, really important to me started with a P. Panties, you know, got to pack the clothes.
Right, okay.
You know, so you know, all the stuff I've told you so far is sort of before everything really hit the fan.
All right, so let's talk about the night, because I remember that sitting in the newsroom here, it was not even useful to pay attention to broadcast media at that point because things were moving so fast. It was the first event in my life I'd ever really watched through Twitter, and it was terrifying.
Yeah.
What was it like up close to be there in town?
Well, it was terrifying, but it wasn't terrifying enough soon enough, honestly, for me, because, and for a lot of people, because the evacuation system was really messed up. I mean, an evacuation went out early that morning, which was then almost immediately canceled, and then another one was not put out. I mean, the actual emergency alert system was activated, and then they canceled it. And no official evacuation notices, the reverse 911 calls or anything like that, none of that was really working for people. Those who did get the reverse 911 calls got them hours after they had already evacuated and their homes had burned. So instead, it was on the level of you're at home and all of a sudden you hear helicopters, bullhorns, sirens going down the street telling everybody to get out. Now, that didn't happen to me. I got out before that came. And I'm fortunate because my house did not burn, but I was about a mile away from the closest home that did burn. And that's not that far.
No, one mile fast. Feels way too close for comfort, I'm sure.
Right. I mean, I could see the flames. I could see trees exploding when I did leave. So that evening, after I left work, I still had my dogs with me, and I went and I realized I couldn't find one of my dog leashes. So I went to go buy a dog leash, and I was on the other side of town. I mean, I'm miles away on the other side of the city, and there are blackened, charred, whole leaves falling down into the parking lot of the shopping center. And you could see this huge, what looked like an optical illusion. It looked like a funnel cloud filled with fire on the other side of the city, closer to my house. Mm-hmm. And I really did think it was just a trick of the light. And it wasn't. It was an actual funnel cloud filled with fire. But
the actual fire nado, which the scientists figured out later on, had the force of an EF3 tornado.
Yeah. Yeah. So while I was taking it seriously, I mean, I really did not understand just how bad it was. So I drove home, made sure that the kids were still packing all their stuff and that everybody had a plan to get away to the other side of the city. And then my phone rang and it was maybe, you know, 8 o'clock, 8:30 at night. So it was still twilight out. And I got a call from my friend Amber, who lives exactly a mile away in Lake Redding Estates. And she said, "Where are you right now?" And I said, "I'm at home." And she said, "Why aren't you gone?" And I said, "Well, I haven't been evacuated. I think I'm okay." And she said, "No, I just left. I was in my house. Then the power went out. And then there was a helicopter and a bullhorn telling me to get out of my neighborhood. There's a 100-foot wall of flame a block behind my house. And she told me that, you know, like lawn furniture and things was flying around. And this guy was standing in my driveway just minutes before, and all of a sudden this really tremendous gusty wind started picking up and blowing everything around in the driveway. And I thought, this is not good. So that's when we got out. That's when we left.
And where did you go?
Well, first I drove 6 blocks west. There's a little municipal airport on the west side of Redding, just 6 blocks from my house. And it's a really flat area and you can really see far to the west. And so I drove up there and that's when I saw the flames and all the trees exploding and houses burning in the distance. And by this time it was fully dark, and it was just horrible. I mean, I knew there was, it was in the city limits. It was burning neighborhoods. And then I saw a caravan of cars, like a steady stream of cars heading east from out in the outer subdivisions of the city. And they started turning down the street that I was sitting on watching the fire. And I thought, I'm going to get caught in this if I don't get out. And that's when I left. And it took me about an hour to get onto the freeway heading north to head up to Ashland.
Just to get onto the freeway, you're saying it took an hour.
Yeah. Even though it should have taken me 3 minutes. It took me an hour because most of the city was without power at this time. My house never lost power, but a lot of the streetlights around the city lost power, and it was chaos. I mean, imagine coming up to a 16-lane intersection that's a four-way stop all of a sudden. And nobody, you know, you've got 16 lanes of traffic, and everybody's freaking out and panicking.
Valerie Ng is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She is a part of the Jefferson Exchange family. She works at JPR in Redding. She's the Northern California Program Coordinator and a classical host. And we're getting her experiences from last July at this time when the car fire came into Redding. You can join us and share your own story and ask some questions of Val as well. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email is jx@jeffnet.org. Mark in Redding, good to hear from you. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Val.
Morning. Yes, I was a full 6 blocks away from the mandatory evacuation zone and at least 3/4 of a mile from the fire itself. But there were people who were on the street from the bridge at Market to, you know, up the Miracle Mile, and they were stuck there. Yeah. If that fire had gotten that far, they would have all been gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you got out safely, obviously. But
I didn't. We didn't leave.
No, you didn't leave. You didn't leave at all. Okay.
We were never in mandatory evacuated. My mother had cataract surgery on Friday morning. We packed everything up, presuming that if the fire got across the river to us, that we wouldn't be allowed back in. So we kept everything in the car. I even had my one of my bicycles on a rack on the back of her car. Mm-hmm. But fortunately, it didn't come to that. But that was the really, to me, the really scary thing about that whole fire was that the people who were mandatorily evacuated were stuck on Market mm-hmm. Street.
Yeah, that was a lot of that going on. Thanks for sharing that story with us, Mark. And Val, we've talked about that a fair amount, I think, since that time, the fact that the fire really moved faster than any human could react.
Right. Nobody, I mean, it jumped the Sacramento River and was burning on both sides of the river in a lot of different directions. And it was kind of indiscriminate. Like, yesterday I drove around some of the subdivisions on the west side of the city where homes burned, and it just struck me as so weird how you would drive down a road and there would be one house gone and all the others are standing. And that one house, by the way, belongs to my friend Todd. And it did belong to my friend mm-hmm. Todd. Now it's just an empty bulldozed lot. But and then if you drive another block or two further, there's 3 houses gone mm-hmm. and all the others are fine. And then you drive another block and all the houses are gone.
And this is exactly what the maps show as well. You remember looking at those, I'm sure, where you would see, you'd look at, like, there's a house gone here, a house gone here. The 3 in between are fine. You know, that mm-hmm. that same sort of pattern, that irregular pattern of this house is gone and this one isn't.
Right. The pattern is there's no pattern.
Right. I mean, kind of, that's the big one. You know,
it was a tornado throwing sparks, throwing burning material on, you know, in a mile swath. Mm-hmm.
So when you didn't have to be on the air and at the studio the next few days after the fire rolled through town, what did you do with your spare time in those first few days after the fire moved on?
Well, for the first night, I drove all the way to Ashland. Mm-hmm. And worked out of the Ashland studios the next day. So I was on the air the next day. And, you know, I was still trying to find out everything I could and trying to find out whose home burned. Did my home burn? Did my neighbor's homes burn? Who's okay? Who's not? Where is it now? And that was really an odd situation to be in from afar. And then the honestly, the countryside around Ashland was on fire around that time as well. It was really smoky everywhere. So I just kept that weekend heading north and west, and went to Coos Bay, where I have a lot of family, and I stayed there, and I could not sleep. I mean, I just kept waking up every couple of hours and getting on Facebook and checking in with friends to make sure that people were okay.
So the friends who lost homes, have they had a chance to get started rebuilding yet?
Pretty much everybody a year later has an empty lot that's bulldozed. I have one friend out of about 17 or 18 that I'm pretty close to, that I have been checking in on and, you know, keep tabs on. And one friend has managed to almost have her home completely rebuilt, but she chose to build a 240 square foot tiny home, a pre-manufactured tiny home. So it's in the process of being manufactured. Everybody else, they've got their home, the original home, and everything has been cleaned, bulldozed. The land pretty much has been graded. They've got their permits in place. They've found a contractor and an architect or whatever they need to build whatever it is they're going to replace their original home with. And that's as far as they've gotten.
All right. So a lot of steps taken, but not the final ones in a lot of cases. So, Val, about a minute left here. I want to ask, this summer has been very quiet so far, and I keep knocking wood every time I say that. Yeah. What do you hear people in Reading saying about the difference between last year and this year? And is there still a sense of trauma?
Oh, yeah. There's PTSD. I mean, every time it's really hot and there's a breeze, the wind picks up, people feel a sense of foreboding. I've noticed fewer people are out. When I drove around through those neighborhoods last night, I saw one person who was in their driveway. I saw nobody out on the sidewalks, in the streets. It's real quiet.
Yes, indeed. We have an email here from Kalina, looks like in Ashland. She writes, in 2014 and 2015, both my mom and stepfather, as well as my dad and stepmother, were evacuated during the King and Butte fires in El Dorado and Amador counties. Both couples had to move their horses to nearby shelters. I stayed at a friend's house during the Butte fire. I remember the sky was completely black and red during the Butte fire, yet we went on with life as normal. Kids at my school kept getting evacuation calls during class. Pretty surreal. Kalina, thanks for sharing that. Valerie Ng, thank you so much for sharing your stories. I know we could go on all day about this, but a lot of stuff still to talk about, unpack really, about the car fire from last year. Thank you.